Welcome to the podcast series from the 9th EMN Educational Seminar on Migration 2023, entitled Protection of Migrants in Vulnerable Situations, organized by the European Migration Network in Slovakia. You're listening to the lecture on the global mobility and access to identity by Baptiste Amieux, Regional Immigration and Border Governance Specialist and the International Organization for Migration Regional Office in Brussels. Prior to this position, Baptiste served as a program manager in Niger for 5 years. Before that, he served with IOM and other UN agencies in Kosovo, Laos PDR, Tunisia, and Burkina Faso. Enjoy the lecture.
So I won't introduce myself again, but I just wanted to take a step back on the discussion. I mean, I think the speaker before has already talked a lot about passports and visas, so I don't want to expand more about that. And just to answer one of the questions, the standards of those of the passports are actually set by ICAO, the Organization for Civil Aviation. But I wanted to take a step back about legal identity, because I think we keep talking about the foundational identity, so the thing that allows us to move. But then there is also how we get access to this identity. And I think, you know, we mentioned a lot of countries and nationalities so far, which, you know, are actually depending on having an identity at birth. So we actually like work now as IOM more about the legal identity as a whole, from foundational to functional. So for us, of course, in order to move, you need to be able to have access to identity. And it's a universal right. So it's not something that is an option. However, nowadays, we still count, and this is the World Bank saying that 850 million people do not have access to identity. I put a very small definition from the UN, but I think, you know, you all know what is legal identity. But there are 850 million people who are not registered, and they don't have any form of identification, which is hampering the right of course, moving, but also the right of accessing education, employment, health, but they don't pay taxes, which you may find a good thing. But when I was in Niger, which is a 24 million people country, they had only 60,000 taxpayers, which, as you can guess, is a major negative factor for the country's funding and administration continuity. So it is extremely important. Then, of course, within this 850 million, most of them are coming from Sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia. And then, of course, the main factor for people not being registered is that children are not children birth are not registered at birth. And I will get back to that about the why. And of course, women are. And there, it's estimated actually that one in two women in countries don't have access to identity. So that being said, you know, of course, whenever we talk about regular pathways, having a visa, crossing a border, you don't even have the choice of regular migration when you actually cannot even get a passport in the first place. But also, even if you have the best passport ever, if you have the most secured passport, and this we saw with a lot of countries where they have a very nice passport, but the document that was used to issue the passport is not legit at all. You would have a Syrian passport that looks perfectly fine in terms of security and in terms of legitimacy of the document itself. It's not a fraudulent document, but the way it was issued might be issued on a non-existent birth certificate, or might be issued on a wrong birth certificate. So that's why, you know, we always say that everything starts at birth and ends at death. And death is very important as well, because it's part of what we call the CRVS ID, the civil registry, which is basically like everything that is related to birth, vital statistics, which are, you know, like divorce, marriage, and so on. And then the identity part, which is more what we call the functional identity. So everything that allows you to move from a point A to a point B, a driving license, a passport, a national ID card, in some other countries, an election card, and so on. So for us, legal identity is, first of all, and for us, I mean, it's not for IOM, I think it's for everybody. If you have access to identity, it's a factor for development, which means that it's proven that the more people have access to identity, the more the country will has chances to develop, the more chances the people have to be resilient, the less chances they have to go for irregular migration as not of a choice, if you see what I mean. We said migration should be always a choice. You should be free to migrate, but you have to do it regularly, and then it should be a choice. It should never be something that you have to migrate because that's your only option in life. So identity is a major factor for development. And you can see that if you go on the World Bank ID for Identity for Development data set, you will see when you compare those who have the most and the highest registration. So it's a right to migrate regularly. Of course, whenever you want to ask for a visa, I've never met a country that would actually accept a visa application without any passport. Of course, you can get the humanitarian visas, or you can get the resettlement if you're a refugee. But that's the very small percentage of the people moving in the world. Once you migrate and you end up in a different country than yours, either regularly or irregularly, and you want to return, and which is the case of many migrants in Europe, let it be voluntarily or not. If you don't have an identity, either because you lost it or if you never had it, it's hampering massively the return process. And you can ask every single government in Europe, they will tell you that why people stay so long in detention centers once they have had their removal order. It's because it takes a lot of time to verify their identity and their country of origin, because they need to verify with this country, is it one of your national? Some countries may, you know, not have any database of these people and say, well, it's not from my country. I've met people in detention centers in Slovenia, for example, where there was somebody was saying he's from Nigeria, but Nigeria refused. And then now he's just like in a limbo. And then, of course, the last point would be security. I think I've heard a few questions, and we talked about terrorists and so on. I mean, obviously, a lack of identity is a major security breach, because when you don't know who is somebody, and you don't know what's the profile of that person, and you don't know where the person is born, it's, of course, like hampering security situation. So that's a bit the, you know, just to set a bit the scene about why identity is extremely related to mobility. I mean, we can talk about mobility and regular pathways, and there are a lot of, like, you know, connected subjects that are extremely interesting, but everything starts when a baby is born, and everything stops when a person dies. But then in between, there is a lot of, like, mobility, which is also related to public and private services. So for us, it's very much something that as IOM, as an agency for migration, we take very seriously. And we are not the only one, obviously. It's not an IOM necessarily issue or topic. I mean, this is something that is related to those working on elections, those working on birth, those working on health, those working on private sector banking, access to banking. I mean, in West Africa, you have an estimated 500 million people who don't have access to identity, which also means that they cannot get access to banking, which is also a massive issue. I also like to say that I don't want to put every country in the same basket and say, oh, look, you know, those where the babies are not registered, they're the poor countries, and then the others are perfectly fine. There are not two groups, basically. You have some countries that do very well on birth registration, but they're not very good on identity, on functional identity. What we see the most as an issue is that usually those two things are very much separate. You have one ministry, one agency that deals with birth registration, and then you have another one that deals with your passports, your ID card, and so on. The problem is that I'm pretty sure it's the same, it's the case in Slovakia, it's the case in France, it's the case in many countries, where you end up at the end of your life with like 12 or 15 different numbers, one for your national ID card, one for your passport, one for your public insurance, one for your election card. While, you know, we always promote the idea of having what we call a unique identity number that follows you your entire life. So that's one issue. Sometimes, you know, you would have countries, and many countries have 99.999% of birth registration. In Europe, it's the case everywhere. You would have it even in other countries like Rwanda, Cabo Verde, Iraq is at 97%. So many countries, they're not at a stage where, like, they need to work on let's register babies. It's rather what type of document we provide. Do we need to provide an identity card to babies? to be, I mean, my response is no. There is no point. How many? What's the frequency of having to change the ID card? At what age we take fingerprints? How do we transfer that into the public services? How can we connect this data from the Ministry of Interior to Ministry of Health and Ministry of Education? So that's, you know, there are plenty of work to be done, not only at the birth registration level, but then how do you transfer that so that there is a very smooth and soft transition towards the different step of your life and the different step of your identity? We have done, as I am, we also work a lot about, so the national in their own countries. And I mean, as Slovakia, for example, I mean, you're part of the EU. The EU, you know, now we are more at a stage where we go towards electronic identity. And I'm not sure about Slovakia having I think you have an electronic identity, which is now, you know, by 2025, it's mandatory that all of the European countries will have an electronic identity, which means that as a Slovak, you could basically travel and live in Germany and use your electronic identity from Slovakia to access health services in Germany. So that's where we are. So in a quite advanced stage, although within EU, you will see a lot of discrepancy. You go to Estonia, and I'm sure some of you are aware, electronic identity in Estonia, very fancy, most advanced in the world. In Estonia, you don't do anything, basically registered at birth, and then you have your app as a citizen, and automatically you get enrolled to every single social welfare benefit you get. You get pop-up from the education portals telling you, hey, you know, you're 13, you're entering that grade, so this is the access for your courses. So, you know, this is where we are as for national citizens in the EU. For migrants in foreign countries, you know, it's also something that we think is part of the mobility and legal identities, like how do you access consular services of your country? So how do you access, you need a copy of your birth certificate to access a driving license course in Czechia or in Slovakia. Can I actually go to my Bangladesh embassy and get a copy of my birth certificate? How easy it is? Is it online? Is it, or does it take 3 months, 5 months? But then also now what we ask to the Commission is, now that we are moving towards this EID for public services throughout Europe, what will be the future for migrants in Europe? Will they have access to this EID as well? Would there be a single EID for migrants throughout Europe, so that if somebody arriving in Italy is moving to Germany and needs to have access to basic services, essential services such as health, how does that person access without this EID? So yeah, so the consular services is very important. We work with Ukraine, for example, on enhancing their Ministry of Foreign Affairs consular service platform so that their citizens can get access to all of their identity proofs that they would require while they are in the EU. Of course, the vulnerable people, the displaced people, and I will get back to the victims of trafficking and smuggling because I think that's the session after me and I will make a bridge towards that, but the displaced person is a very important aspect of identity. First of all, I was based in Niger. I spent some time in Mozambique. It is proven that now that the armed groups are targeting identity database and archives because they know that's the last link that ties a government with their population. That's the only proof that tells that you're from Slovakia and you're like under the governance of the government of Slovakia. So the armed groups would actually go and burden down in Western Niger or in Northern Mozambique those archives so that they would erase every single trace of those people's nationality. And so we actually supported the government of Mozambique to like reissue these documents, because when you have 600,000 people displaced without any proof of identity, how do you know there is not a terrorist as part of these people? How do you know who you should give access to humanitarian support to? So it's very important that we provide an identity to these people as fast as possible. Not entering the statelessness, because I don't know, usually it's a question I have, but statelessness is very much dealing with UNHCR. It's a very much, you know, it's from a convention, and it's a very particular topic. So I will not touch statelessness, but we, for example, also advise countries with UNHCR about what they should do about statelessness, but also what they should do about dual citizenship, because it's also some, you know, it's a real topic for certain countries that used to allow it or not allowing it anymore. And then sometimes you have people ending up in a statelessness situation when they're losing their two citizenships. And then, of course, the irregular migrants who sometimes don't have an illegal identity at birth, but sometimes, you know, would have and lost it or destroyed it. Then, of course, it's a very complex topic where you need to find a solution, where you need to find a way to identify those people, or at least give them a temporary form of identification, both for security, but also access to public services. A short summary in a way of what I mentioned and the strategy that we have set up. And again, I mean, this is not for me to do any promotion of IOM or anything. I think it's just about the promotion about the topic, because I think for a very long time as IOM, we were very much focusing about the travel document, the passport security, the visa. We were, you know, designing visa stickers. We were supporting countries to design their passports. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, we were realizing that, you know, the more we were providing very good passports, the more we were providing like IT systems at borders, the more we were also realizing that if you give IT systems at borders in countries where there is no identity or very little, if you take Somalia, I mean, 6% of the children are registered, then, you know, you realize it's a bit pointless. I just wanted to go back to why people are not registering, because I get the questions all the time saying, you know, there are a million of reasons. Sometimes it's because of the price. In some countries, it's you have to pay to register your baby, and it's expensive. Some others is purely traditional or cultural. In some countries, for example, in Niger, they had to register the baby within 24 hours after the birth, while actually traditionally they would rather take the baby back to the village, discuss the first name for 2 or 3 days. And then come back. But the problem is, like, they don't come back, because if they come back 2 or 3 days later, then they have to pay a fee. So that's one of the reasons why people don't get registered. And then in Tonga, we were also asked by the government to try to understand and analyze why people were not registering on a very specific island. While there, it was mostly because, you know, they had a belief that basically the soul of the baby would get stolen if it was registered. In some other countries, it's because it's too far. So it means that the registration office is too far. In some countries, it was because you had to go to the police to register your baby, and people were not really keen to go to the police station because they don't have trust in the police, and so on and so on. So you have a lot of reasons why people don't register, and many people, they don't understand why, because, of course, I mentioned public services, and I'm sure some of you may think, but what type of public services you get in Somalia or Niger? Very little. So, of course, the incentive is why should I register? And it's true, like in Europe, why do we register birth as person? What interest we actually see in it? I mean, we do that as like something that we feel is mandatory and something that is good. But, you know, what is the, you know, we think because, yeah, we want this baby to have a legal existence and have access to the services that it will be entitled or she will be entitled to. And it's in many countries, you don't have this incentive, and people don't understand why they have to do it. So there is a lot of like awareness raising to be done so that people understand what's behind. And even if it's not now, then you need to go, if you need to, you know, in 15, 20 years, when there will be some services, then you don't want to make them marginalized. And then, of course, there is the digitalization aspect as well. And it's very important. And we are the first ones to say, you know, e-governance, electronic identity, digital ID, very important. We want people to be able to, you know, like connect to their public services portal or to their private sector's portal with their ID and secure authentication system, not with their Facebook or Instagram accounts. Because they are a form of digital identity, but they are not the ones that are the most secured because they are owned by private sector companies. But there is also the digital divide. You need to be careful that in some countries, again, taking Niger because I know this one, you have 1% of electrification in rural areas. So you want to be careful that if you put everything online, you need to make sure that people can have actually access online. I'm not going to go too many details about the outcome of the strategy, because they were mentioned in the strategy in the video, sorry. And again, I think the bottom line is that we want to give more tools so that people can actually move freely. And again, the legal pathways access is important. The fact of making visas available is very important. And I think more and more countries in Europe are understanding now that we have a shortage of workforce due to Ukraine, due to aging population. There is a pressure from the private sector that says we need more migrants. But then some countries told me, yeah, we put more visa, but we don't have as many people applying as you would think so. I remember Romania, when I was in Tunisia, the Romanian embassy was telling me, like, we have scholarships for people to come and study medicine in French in Romania, and they had very, very few applicants. So that's also why we need to make sure that people have the necessary documents and tools to apply to those legal pathways. And just very briefly, like, how do you actually deal and fix legal identity? Again, there is no one size fits all. I always say, don't take a model of identity somewhere and transfer it somewhere else. We have had some bad models recently, for example, in India, where basically the new ID card was very much criticized because very much piloted by the Ministry of Interior, and also kind of used as a surveillance tool more than access to identity. So there is no one size fits all. We always say try to inspire from different models, but the identity scheme is very much needs to be tailored on your population, the profile of your population, the culture, the religion, the traditions, and your level of income, basically. And of course, we always say at some point it needs to become mandatory. There is a certain level of freedom of choice when it comes to identity. So of course, you know, the assessments, I mean, we do a lot of assessments to understand, again, what's the situation in a country X or Y. The legal aspect, it's not a very sexy one. Of course, we would prefer to have more pictures of like us providing an ID card to a baby, but that's, at the end of the day, it really goes back to a lot of like legal framework and laws and access to, you know, again, to the incentive, to the aspect of mandatory. To get identity, data protection is very important because, again, in Africa you have still 20 countries that don't have any data protection regulation in place, but you also have in some European countries or Asian countries where like the data protection regulations are not up to date or not at international standards. Data sharing among ministries, as I was mentioning, is super important, and it's a lot of like legal issues. The IT part is very important, again, because we're all going towards electronic identity, and it's quite complicated because you also need to make sure that your government and your people have the required IT equipment, but also the digital literacy. Digital identity, I mentioned, the international standards we mentioned in the presentation before as well with IATA, with ICAO. And then, of course, the consular services, because you want to make sure that somebody that is migrating is not being, has the same level of access as some as their nationals. And of course, I mean, the infrastructural aspect might be the least important, I would say, but still, like in massive countries, you need to make sure that people don't have to travel too long to get access to identity. So I would actually stop here. I hope it was interesting. I know, you know, it might not have been, you know, like the migration trends or all the things that you maybe we were expecting, but I really wanted to insist on the legal identity because, again, it's the prerequisite for any form of migration that people should have. Let it be regularly, like the identity should give you some sort of like safety, security, and it tells who you are. So I will stop here and thank you.
This lecture was part of the 9th EMN Educational Seminar on Migration, entitled Protection of Migrants in Vulnerable Situations. The seminar is organized by the International Organization for Migration Slovakia, as the coordinator of the Slovak EMN National Contact Point. This activity is funded by the European Union and co-funded by the Ministry of Interior of the Slovak Republic. Thank you for listening.